श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर की जय, श्री श्री गौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री श्री गौराध माधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्मस्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। सो गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल, वेलकम, थैंक्स फॉर कमिंग, दोस्त कनेक्टेड ऑनलाइन एज वेल। एंड वी आर टुडे कंटिन्यू विद आवर सीरीज ऑफ लेक्चर्स ऑन श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति, द प्रेयर्स ऑफ ब्रह्मा जी टू श्री कृष्ण आफ्टर डे the Brahma Vimohan Lila, in this very important section of the Bhagavatam, one of those main jewels that the Bhagavatam is sharing with us in the terms of series of prayers that contain so much tattva, siddhanta, bhava, so much insights about what the Bhagavatam is about. So today we are in our lecture number 40. And we will be studying verse 38 today, almost reaching the conclusion of the whole series in a few days. But as usual, let's begin with a brief summary, recap of what we saw yesterday, verse 37, when we spoke about the ultimate reason for Bhagavan executing his Nara Lila on earth. There are many levels of why Krishna descends as avatar, if you will, on this planet, but what's the ultimate reason for that? So Brahma said, after a whole series of praise, for verse of praise in the Brajavasis, this was the last verse of that section, when he says, "O Master, in order to expand the totality of bliss of your surrendered devotees, you imitate the ways of people on earth, although you have nothing to do with material existence." So here is a we have seen from the commentators a strong emphasis on this point that Krishna's relationship with the Brajavasis, with his friends, with everyone there is not false, it's not illusory, because it happens on earth. It doesn't mean that it's here today and gone tomorrow, as many things that happen on earth are characterized by. This is not the case, so we have to make it like a very clear separation between everything that happens on earth generally and Bhoma Lila, on earth, on location, but not of it, if you will. So that's an important first point that our chair have struggled strongly to make clear for us. We mentioned how also Brahma, in one sense, already replied to this question before, but somehow he had, again, this doubt came to him, and he replied to himself in this verse with this, making the point, it's not that easy to grasp the nature of Krishna's Lila, even in Goloka Vrindavan, what to speak if all that comes on earth. And already if you have a glimpse of the Lila in Goloka, it seems human-like, but you can say, but it's going on in another planet, in heaven, if you will. But what if all the things are performed here in our same planet? It seems even more human-like, more ordinary for the untrained eye. So it's very important to understand that we are approaching a reality that is not that easy to grasp. We shouldn't just approach it untrained, if you will, or unprepared, but understand the necessity for acquainting ourselves with many layers and degrees of considerations to properly appreciate the glory of Krishna Lila, Braja Lila, Bhoma Lila, Aprakrita Lila. Seems mundane, but it's super transcendental. Seems totally, as we say, tribal, uncivilized, naive. But it's the second naivete, it's not the first one. First one is the naivete of, in this world, you can be uncivilized, ignorant, innocent, or whatever. But this second naivete has so much, as we say, complexity being integrated in the equation. So much Aishvarya is part of that equation of the madhurya, of the intimacy, but it's so perfectly integrated that you almost never see it. Sometimes it comes, as we say, from the cemetery. It's buried under layers and layers of love. So we made this point, you know, the ultimate purpose for Bhagavan coming on earth and performing whatever he performs, first and foremost, is mainly to facilitate to experience loving interaction with his devotees. And why on earth? Because, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentioned, planet Earth provides not only a human-like setting, different from Mars and Saturn or other planets, with all respect to them, but also due to the nature of mundane stages, it creates a very unique contrast. Now, he gave this example: if you put a candle in sunlight, it's one thing, but in darkness, it's another. If you put a diamond in a white, transparent background, is one thing, but in a dark one, is another. So if you put the highest jewel and brightest loving exhibition of Brajalila in a considerably dark place, as here, it creates contrast. So that which is already glorious and beautiful somehow increases the experience of chamatkar or astonishment by being put in a contrasting situation where its glory shines much more, basically. So that's one way to also explain why on earth. You have this quote in English, why on earth this is happening? So this is the original reason for that. Why on earth, in this case, why on earth this is happening on earth? So our chair is a very generous explaining that to us. And we mentioned that's the main purpose, and all the other functions of his godhood, establishing dharma, retiring adharma, killing asuras, and so on, those are concomitant effects that are accomplished by other portions of him. But Swayam Bhagavan Braja Krishna is exclusively absorbed in in interacting with his Brajavasis, first and foremost, with those who aspire to enter into that degree, and to all devotees in general. And in this way, you get a long list of levels of priorities, if you will. And he again performs his lila with the Brajavasis in divine ignorance, as our Gurmash will like. So they are not aware of all these Aishwaric elements that are there, because that's on the back of their necks. Not the word Aishwarya, as Baladevi Devotion says, written on their backs. And if they happen to see the necks of some other Brajavasis, they are illiterate, so they don't know how to read the word. So it's like Aishwarya is not there in the picture, basically. And also we say, by extension, Krishna is doing all that for us, because by performing those lilas on earth, there is some precedence that will be, we continue in time and will be passed through parampara. We have now as Raganuga sadhakas trying, have the chance of hear about that, remember that, sing about that, trying to absorb and project our eternal prospect in that direction. So Krishna is, as you say, he comes from something mainly, but so many other things are accomplished simultaneously. That's why he's called here Prabhu. Today also, but we'll see, but in yesterday's verse, Prabhu. Which means, one of the meanings, many meanings of Prabhu is Samartha, which means capable. Now, he was capable of doing many things, and even when he's doing one thing, 108 things also are accomplished simultaneously, secondarily, automatically. So that was the idea we tried to start. This is we are here speaking not only about God, that was the point that came yesterday. One thing is all that God is, that's Vishnu Narayan, but here we speak about all that God can be. Now, the potential in the life of Bhagavan, and that's Krishna. And all that Krishna can be, that's Gaura. No? So we never, as Albert Einstein once said, we are another Pramana here, he will say, every time you try to investigate something or consider something, you always have to analyze that thing along with its potential. You cannot just consider something without considering its potential. Potential means all that it can be, although it's not there. So God is not an exception to that rule. So, and as we concluded, on earth, this experience, this contrasting experience, brings special chamatkar. Over and over again, this point is made. The astonishment that is the essence of rasa. So this was the end of Brahma's praise to the Brajavasis in a series of considerable verses, just reaching the high point of his stuti. And now, beginning from today and till the next two verses as well, Brahm will wrap up his presentation, if you will, although it's not an official presentation that he's reading some script or something. But he's concluding his whole stuti by concluding, by reaffirming, basically, as we will see today and the next days, how little he knows about Krishna, how nothing he knows about Krishna, and about everything in relation to him. His Aishvarya, his Madhurya, bhakt by his Aishvarya, all that is connected to that, his associates, and so on. Expressing deep humility, and he began praying to Krishna respectfully and in a humble way, and he will close the curtain in a similar way. Although in between so many things were said, so many things happened in his heart, but in a proper way he will conclude respectfully and close, especially, as we will see, because of Krishna's reaction to his prayers, which is zero. And Sumati is suffering so much because of that. So we'll try to explain why this is going on, and so you can have better sleep this night. She didn't have a good sleep last night, maybe probably because of that. So sorry, what?
I wish it was that friendly.
Yeah. So let's go to today's verse, which is also in Anushtub, again the same meter, 8 syllables every line. So I'll recite it first, and then if you want, you can we can recite all together. So it says, Jananta iva janantu kim bahuktya name prabhu manasu vapusu vacho vaibhavam tabago charaha. All together. Jananta iva janantu kim bahuktya name prabhu manasu vapusu vacho. Cho bhai bhavam tavago chara. So Brahma is saying, in his in the translation to this verse, those who say that they know, let them know. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. So that's today's verse, which is one famous one. I mean, there are many verses which are very well known from Brahma's to this one of them. So basically Brahma will acknowledge here, I fully know that I don't know. So those who say they know, well, let them know, or let them say. To say let them know is like, let them say they know. Let them think whatever they want. I don't want to be part of that club, if you will. No? As far as I'm concerned, especially after going through all this conversion that he experienced in the last few minutes, between Brahma, Bhagavasur Lila, Brahma, Mohan Lila now, see, I don't want to speak very much about this matter. I mean, what, as much as I open my mouth, I become more and more embarrassed. So, whatever, I will conclude just saying this. As far as your opulences, and we'll say the word opulences imply not only Aishvarya, but everything, Madhurya, associates, about everything related to you is concerned, all of that is beyond my mind, the reach of my mind, words, and body. You know, this three famous triangle always mentioned. Danu, Van, Manu. So let's go to the word by word, and then we will try to unpack the content of this word. I'll repeat each word, and you can recite after me. Janantaha.
Janantaha.
Persons who think they know.
Persons who think they know.
Oh, this will be about Krishna. Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Janantu.
Janantu.
Let them think like that.
Let them think like
that. Kim.
Kim.
What is the use?
What is the use?
Bahu uktya.
Bahu uktya.
With many words.
With many words.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
Me.
Me.
My.
My.
Prabhu.
Prabhu.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Manasaha.
Manasaha.
Of the mind.
Of the mind.
Bapushaha.
Bapushaha.
Of the body.
Of the body.
Bachaha.
Bachaha.
Of the words.
Of the words.
Vaibhavam.
Vaibhavam.
Opulences.
Opulences.
Tava.
Tava.
Your.
Your.
Gocharaha.
Gocharaha.
Within the range.
Within the range.
So, this is today's verse. Again, Brahma here, from this onwards, start to... You can feel the mood of closing the statement. He has spoken 37 verses, but now he's feeling better stop speaking at this point, because no matter what I say, this is all beyond my range. And a few minutes ago, I thought I knew all this pretty well, and now better let's conclude here or something. So he's starting to retire himself. We will have two more verses for that, but he starts his disappearance, if you will. Disappearance Lila with this verse. So let's begin by sharing our Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse, Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvat, as usual, and then we will continue with the other ancient commentaries. Brahma then once again deprecates Gyan and indirectly praises Bhakti with a touch of sarcasm. He says, "What more can be said? Those who think they know some indeterminate reality that lies beyond you, and thus do not understand your appearance in this world, your friendships, and so on, should know this. O Prabhu, your magnificence lies beyond the reach of mind, body, or speech. The glory of your mind and body are beyond them, and they are also beyond me, even as I stand here before you. And so too is the magnificence of your speech, especially the wonder of the words you exchange with your friends that render the Vedas speechless." So this is the rendition of our Guru Maharaj based on some of the ancient commentaries and his own insights. And the added idea here is also Brahma is not only speaking about himself, but pointing also to Gyanis. There are many sections in the Brahma Stuti where Brahma is, by overtly criticizing the process of Gyan, in this case mostly the approach of trying to grasp reality only through the head, and concluding in an impersonal way. And indirectly, this is a praise of Bhakti. No? When sometimes it is done like this, and many verses have happened like that. Gyan is downplayed, and indirectly Bhakti is praised. So those who think they know you, and actually think, "Oh, I know, yeah, Krishna is just a temporary manifestation of Brahman. So his appearance here and his form, all that is illusory." Those who think like that, let them think like that. I don't have anything to do there. Those who think Krishna's friends are illusory, his body is illusory, his relationships are illusory, and only Brahman is real. Okay, no problem. What I can say is whatever I've seen, your body, your friends, all those things that others consider illusory, what I can say, Brahma's saying, is this is way beyond the reach of my mind. This is way beyond that. Like implying those who consider all this is illusory, probably they are approaching that reality through their minds and words and body exclusively, and not taking shelter of you, not resorting to revelation, and that's why they conclude such. But I have received being sprinkled with the drop of your mercy, and now I can say something which is, this is all beyond my foreheads, which are still spinning. And you are your form, I cannot understand your form, even is in front of me now. And especially interestingly, Guru Maharaj concludes, your speech, especially the speech you share with your friends, your intimate talks that I have been witnessing a minute ago, I don't know what to say. So that's my conclusion. He will say, Jananto iva jananta. Jananto. Those who think they know, let them know. And of course, as we'll see, Brahma includes himself in some way in that statement. I thought I knew, and now I realize. It's a pretty Socratic statement. No? Socrates will say famously, "The only thing I know is that I don't know." Which is a very wise statement if you try to enter deeply. It may seem like he's saying nothing, but such a sutra was like the conclusion of not only years, but lifetimes of wisdom and culture. You know, so he concluded, the only thing I know is that I don't know. When you have a glimpse of the Absolute, how much you can claim, positively assert yourself on in relation to the Infinite. I know. The moment you say no, be ready for Vimohan Lila. So, you, Sri Samara said, you can just touch one point of one infinite line of the Absolute. How much you can say, I know the Absolute by touching one point. And even that point is infinite. No, you got a glimpse of one point that is infinite, so that doesn't mean you know it. I mean, it's more what you don't know than what you know. So how much you can know publicly assess also yourself in that so-called positivity. You know, in that case, you have to adopt a negative position, if you will. I don't know who I am. So that's what Brahma is saying here. The only thing that I know is that I don't know. Docta ignorantia, as we said the other day, acknowledging the limits of human reasoning and our reach and capacity in relation to the Absolute. Again, if you take the Absolute out of the equation, of course you can think, I know so much and I'm this and I'm... But when you put the Absolute into the picture automatically, by contrast, it's like, okay, you thought you were the candle, but now you bring the real light and you feel, I'm dark, I'm shadow now. So that's what Brahma is saying. No? I'm starting to perceive the limits of my knowledge, as we say many times. That's pretty much a great, important realization. And for that, sometimes we need to push our capacities to their limits. Try to use your head as much as you can, so you can prove the limits of your head. I'm not promoting just try to swallow with your head, but you have a head, use your head. And even when you try to use your head independently, it will collapse at one point. Head and rational capacities, empirical reach, it all will like fall apart, telling you, this is the point that I can accompany you till this point of your journey. Beyond this, no way, I can't enter there. So we need to have empirical, direct experience of how limited these tools are, how useful they are, until which limit. And when we go beyond that limit, it's not that you stop using those things, but you understand the need to resort and put your head on the floor, as Brahma said in the beginning, Namanta Eva. So something comes from the other side. And he will say, and regarding those who think they know, especially regarding to you, because one thing is someone in this world thinking, okay, I know many things, and they don't have God in the picture. Okay, that's not nice, but that's not so unbecoming, so ugly. But when some people brings you in the picture, Brahma says, and say, dare to say, I know about Krishna, everything, that's even more disgusting. Vibhatsa. No. Without God, okay, I'm an atheist or whatever, I know this, okay. But if you bring God in limit to the infinite, you dare nonetheless to say, I know about Him. Oh my gosh, that's a lot. You follow my point. It can be more dangerous to be a theist and fall into all the unbecoming things as a theist that you can fall in as a non-theist, if you will, by not including God in the picture. And that's, yesterday I was hearing one quote from Sadhananda that was read in one lecture, and he basically began his quote like this, not like, those who follow officially a religious path are generally the ones who do the worst things, and all these type of worst expressions of something happen in the context of including God into the picture. Like what I am explaining now. You know, when you take Him out and you do the same thing, it's not as grotesque, if you will, unbecoming. But when you put Him, and in the name of Him, or while having Him, you claim this type of things, or so many other things, oh, that becomes like very unbecoming. So Brahma is realizing this and saying, especially to those who think they know about you, I offer my pranam to them from Brahma Lok. And if they are in Brahma Lok, I go to another planet and I offer pranam from them to that planet, some distance. And so in one sense, again, we could say that's a subtle criticism to jnanis, who in many cases they think they know. Jnan means knowledge. So I have knowledge, I know. And they may think, I know Krishna's form, I know his lila, I know his parikars. All this temporary manifestation of nirguna Brahman. That's one way of understanding this verse, of Brahma's criticism, which was also condemned in previous verses. No? But another way, again, more relatable to our own situation is, you are Gaudiya, officially car-carrying member of the Sampradaya. But nonetheless, you may somehow feel, I know now about Krishna. I memorized one verse from the Bhagavatam. So I think I can go my way through. Whatever the point. No? Or you become proud, you think, I know, 20 years senior devotee, I can quote, I can speak, I'm so familiar with Brahma's. Say, I don't know anything. Brahma is the most senior devotee you can imagine. I mean, nobody's devotee up before him. I mean, he's the most ancient devotee. Foreheads, he knows so much. And he's realized, I don't know anything. So that can be applicable ultimately not only to jnanis, to impersonalists, but as we spoke these days, we can be impersonalists as well. We can be jnanis while carrying a card of, I'm not jnani, I'm a bhakta. So, and that's why Brahma himself is putting himself into this criticism list first, like implying, I'm supposedly a devotee, I'm the first one, supposedly I'm the founder of the Sampradaya in one way. So, but I've committed this mistake, so we have to learn from this. And Brahma is saying here, indeed your magnificence, Bhai Bhavam, again, Bhai Bhavam not only means Krishna's Aishwarya, but Krishna's associates, Krishna's Leela, all that comes from him in that context, all his Madhurya, which is backed by Aishwarya, all your magnificence lies way beyond the reach of my mundane functions. Brahma feels himself, my mind, my senses, my body, my words cannot touch that reality. Atasri Krishna Namadi Navabit Vidahyam Indriyai. It is said, the name of Krishna, etc., which means his name, form, qualities, associates, navabit grahyam indriya, cannot be grasped by the senses. You cannot. But sevon mukehi jivado swayam eva spuratida. But when you have a proper attitude of approaching him in seva with the intention of pleasing him humbly, those same senses that cannot reach him become portals and facilitators through which Krishna will reveal himself to you. So again. But if not, the Upanishads say, words go there and return. The Gita Krishna says, if you surrender to me, you go there and never return. If you do not surrender to me, whatever you throw there always returns. It cannot enter. It's not going there with the proper act, so it's coming back. No. Visa rejected. Go back. No. Or you don't have even visa, as Srila Samaras will say. You are trying to enter the country only with passport. Sorry. Go back. So you reach the limits, but then Jai Vijay or whoever is there on the pearly gates will say, sorry, you don't have the proper path to enter here. And remember, Brahma a few minutes ago considered, Krishna's form is that of an imposter. All these boys are ordinary fellows. This picnic is just like, what's this? I mean, he never thought in terms of lila. So somehow he feels, I committed aparat to Krishna's form, associates, lila. Of course, this is in the context of a bigger picture, as we spoke, and Yogamaya is very instrumental in Brahma's Vimohan. And ultimately, as we say, we could say all this was orchestrated even above Brahma for the mothers and cows of Vrindavan who want to have Krishna for a year as their, not for a year, but having him as a kid. So there's so bigger picture than the bigger picture, and Yogamaya orchestrating all that. Brahma fits in one point of that, and of course he's, as we will see, incredibly blessed by all this as well. So, but in his humility at this point, he's putting himself first in the list of criticism. It's not so much to the jnanis, it's not so much to those devotees who think they know, it's about me. And if that serves someone else, okay, but it's about me first. Now, our prayers will always be like this, from our particular situation. And he concludes saying that that was especially wondrous regarding that collapses all my functions, he says, are the words and interactions you have with your friends. Remember, that was what triggered the whole Brahma Vimohan Lila. Brahma came and witnessed a picnic. And that picnic triggered the whole unfolding of this situation, Lila prayers. He saw Krishna interacting with his friends in a certain way, speaking, eating with his friends in a certain way, and he felt this is way beyond the Vedas. This is transgressing the Vedas. Then realized this is transcending the Vedas, not transgressing. This is the purpose, the ultimate. The Vedas are hinting at that. But this Vedanta, the end of the Veda, lies at the feet of the Bhagavatam. Sarva Vedanta Sar. The Bhagavatam itself describes itself as the essence of all conclusion of the Vedas. So the Vedas just can hint at that, but when the Vedas themselves look, glimpse at that direction, they become speechless, in the words of like Guru Maharaj here. Srotam Abhyupadri Shadam Dure Harikatam Brita Mahaprabhu said. Now those, that place where the Upanishads can take you, the Shruti, that's one thing, but where in Harikata or Bhagavatam can take you, that's way beyond that. That's the same idea. Shruti Viru Bimrigyam, says Udham. The Veda, the Shruti themselves are running after reaching the goal of Raja Bhakti, but still they are trying to. Brahma said the same thing a few verses before when he prayed to be born as something in Braj. Anyhow, let's go to some of the ancient commentaries, beginning with Sridhar Swami. So it says like this, from the very beginning of this stuti, of these prayers, Brahma stated that Krishna is hard to understand. Going back to the very first verses. He's a dakshaya before the reach of mind and senses. When he says, namanta eva gyan praya sudapasya, I'm not trying to understand, I put my head on the ground and hopefully give me mercy. By your mercy only one can understand you. He made these points many times. And Sridhar Swami said, he made this point because his qualities are both inconceivable and limitless. So, again, it's not easy to understand an inconceivable guy, limitless personality, if you will. It's not easy. Krishna is transcendent and immanent at the same time. He seems to be localized, but he's everywhere, like this pastime where he showed Yashoda all the universe in his mouth, but he was inside the universe, standing there in front of Yashoda, but all the universe were inside him. So, achintya. Limitless, he's unlimited, he's not, he doesn't have qualities, he is his qualities. He's not different from all those things. He's his name, as we spoke in the Japa retreat. He's his form, as we spoke in the Jamastami. He's his gunas. So, and some philosophers, Sridhar Swami continues, may say, we understand Lord Krishna perfectly. In this verse, Brahma speaks as if mocking such persons. Again, putting himself first in the mocking list, if you will. as we say again, in the we shouldn't be very enthused about condemning other people. They say they know Krishna, they say that he has no form. But how much we are still on that side, in a disguised way, which is even worse. So we should be very strict with ourselves before trying to. On the other day, one devotee invited to send me a message. He has a podcast on theology, devotee, and he told me that he was thinking about speaking about how bad impersonalism was. So some devotee suggested to invite me to speak with him about that. And I was thinking, I understand the point. Yeah, we are not promoting impersonalism, but which impersonalism is the bad one? Which is the one that is so bad? Because in one sense, you can attain Brahma Sayuja and stay there forever. So somehow, if there is an eternal prospect, how much you can call that totally bad? So if that is not as bad as we thought, then which is the really bad impersonalism? And that's the one that still resides at home, if you will, inside my heart. as we spoke in our class on prayer, you know, that is still, when I'm not treating Krishna as a person, when I'm not even considering myself an existing individual and just move around in an idealistic way, but carrying a card that I'm Gaudiya Vaishnava theistic, monotheistic, and personalistic, lip service to the idea. So, anyhow, probably I will be speaking on that list if the idea is accepted. So the idea is, we also spoke many times with Brahma saying here, those people who think they know, they are to be mocked. And I'm first in the list, he said. As we spoke, they say, don't take Krishna consciousness for granted. Never get fully accustomed. Never conclude, I know who Gurudev is, what Srimurti is about, what's the name of Krishna, what's Prasad, what's residing in an ashram, what's Sadhu Sangha. Be very careful of never reaching that dangerous, suffocating conclusion. I know, already I know. Now, so you like scratch, okay, how do you say when you do it like this? Cross, check it out. Out?
Off.
Check it off. Okay, done. Krishna consciousness, I know what it is. Next subject. So next subject, we give you an eraser to delete that checking. You are students forever, Celestial Maharaj said. No? And our duty is only to increase our experience of sacred wonder, we could say. And there's no end to that. So that's where we are expected to go through in a mystical path, basically. You have to constantly be experience your chamatkar, your astonishment, your sacred wonder. I mean, because there is place for that. There is total potential for that. As I was speaking yesterday with one devotee, friend of mine, Jai Jagannath Prabhu, and we were speaking about these topics, how sometimes we fall into taking Krishna consciousness for granted, and I told him the idea came like, well, we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so our Ishtadev is Mahaprabhu, as Gaudiyas, Sri Gauranga is our deity, and Mahaprabhu is Krishna in his most curious moment. So our Ishtadev is a god of curiosity, a god of constant exploration. Is Krishna wondering, what must it be to taste the mood of Radha and doing all that is required for... I mean, he's really investing himself into that project with full curiosity, with full willingness to explore, and of course with full wonder after that, enduring that and forever. So if such a person is our deity, embodying such a degree of curiosity, exploration, and so on, we should properly represent the spirit of our deity, the sadhakas, with our own exploration, spirit, willingness to keep ourselves in a state of wonder and curiosity. Because if we do the opposite, we are just checking out our deity, basically. We are like making our Ishtadev disappear. So who we are without our Ishtadev? So anyhow, some thoughts regarding what Sridhar Swami mentions. Let's go to Srila Sanatan Goswami Prabhu. We had Vaishnava Toshani. He has a few interesting things to say. Brahma summarizes the glory of bhakti and the insignificance of Gyan Yoga as expounded in verse 3. Jnana Prayasa Mudapasya. Brahma then showed Jnana has to be totally rejected, trying to know Krishna without loving Krishna, basically. Let those who think they know the glory of your bhakti consider themselves big pandits. They don't quite know. According to Sanatana Goswami, this is what Brahma is saying. The first line, basically. Oh, yeah, they think they know about you. They think they know about bhakti. They consider themselves pandits. Okay, I don't have time to lose in that direction. Let them think whatever they want. But they don't know. So Sanatana Goswami says, therefore the drift is, let those who strive for Gyan accomplish Gyan. Because there is people striving for Gyan, wanting to just realize everything through that method. Let them attain that. Which again is a lesson for us, that sometimes you want to convert and convince everyone about whatever you are doing. And that's not necessarily the point. I mean, Brahma now is in a very ripe, mature point, converted himself, so he's pretty capable to convert others. So that's an interesting point. When you reach that point of conversion, when you actually can convert others, probably you are not willing to convert anyone. No. And when you are not converted yourself, you want to convert the whole world because you are not converted. Mm-hmm. So you need the whole world being converted so they somehow not convert you, but convince you that, okay, I must be in the right place because everyone is doing this thing. But when you are very high and advanced and you are really empowered to change others, but you don't feel that urge, I need to change people, I need to convert people. You are, okay, if they want this, it's not that you are not compassionate, you follow my point, because compassion does mean you just run after people and jump up on their necks and make them swallow Srimad Bhagavatam volume or something. It's just... So, anyhow. So let those who think they know. This is a sarcastic statement. What more can be said about the insignificance of jnana and the greatness of bhakti? So again, this is a big point in this whole section of Brahma Stuti. You know, jnana and bhakti, and the contrast and the difference, not they are the same, as many people may think. Oh, you choose karma, jnana, bhakti, it's just about choosing and it's the same. The same. It's according to your nature, you will be inclined. If you are more emotional, you go to bhakti. If you are more intellectual, you go to jnana. If you are more world-oriented, you go to karma. You pick your path. It's not necessarily like that. You may pick some path for some reasons, but there is a gradation also. There's a reach where each path can take you. So this is a big point in this section. And again, we are not about demonizing jnana, but just making the point. And Brahma is making it, don't try to approach God with your head. And he has four of them. So don't try to approach God with your heads. He said that with four. What if you have only one? In that place, even if you have four, don't try it, Brahma is saying. Even if you think so much that it's like if you have four, he has four literally, he's saying, you will collapse. If you want to have some spinning experience, okay, you try it. But that is not the way. So in this connection, not go with your head there, Brahma says, according to Sanatana Goswami, Brahma addresses Krishna, Prabhu, all you who have an amazing, infinite, huge power. Prabhu can refer to all this. That's a pretty powerful word, Prabhu. Sometimes the devotees think it's just for calling other people. Sometimes the devotees come to me and, Prabhu, sorry. Maharaj, I didn't want to offend you by calling you Prabhu. I mean, and I'm wondering, do you have an idea what does it mean, Prabhu? I mean, you're offended by calling me Prabhu because I'm not at all close to that idea. In that sense, you offended the name Prabhu, not me. But that's the name of Krishna, which implies a lot. So you who have an amazing, infinite, huge power. So if someone calls you Prabhu, better you take responsibility for that addressing. Your greatness cannot be approached by writing ability with my body, Brahma is saying, by descriptions using words, or by thinking with the mind, since your greatness is continuous and inconceivable. Continuous, ongoing. Again, there's a potential to evolve. It's inconceivable, which means incomprehensible through logic. That's clarified here. In that sense, it's inconceivable. It can be conceived by your grace, by revelation. It's implied, Sanatana Goswami said, that everything distinct from this is within Brahma's range. In other words, Brahma is a pretty capable person, with mind, words, and body. I mean, he can write, he can speak very eloquently, he can think a lot in four directions. So many things are within his range, again, without including the absolute. We could say almost everything is within his range. In terms of body, mind, and words. When you include Krishna in the equation, he collapses and says, I'm nobody, I don't know anything. That's a contrast again. So he remains a chintya in that sense. A chintya kaluye bhavana tamstarkina jojiye prakriti vyam param jachat tada chintyasya lakshanam. Those things which are a chintya in nature, cannot be approached by mundane argument. You can't even touch that platform. There's another methodology altogether to reach there. Sanatana Goswami then comes, there is another explanation. He will give like three more, as is usual with him. Or. At first there was a description which began as the highest praise of the Lord's body. There was a beginning of Brahma Stuti. Brahma was glorifying Krishna's body as eternal, infinite, and so on. Having given substance to this later on, by describing the glory of the spiritual practice of bhakti to him, by a series of arguments spoken in anticipation of doubts about the nature of his body, now Brahma sums it up, saying, another meaning for Prabhu, O you who eminently exists, to Prabhu, Bho can be connected with Bhava, and Bhava also can mean existence. And Pra means in a very special way, like Pra, Char, or so many words, Pra. Okay, Prabhu means you who exist in a very special way. Or you who attain, Sanatana Goswami says, you who attain a manifestation as a most beautiful body. That's another meaning of Prabhu. Which implies, Sanatana Goswami concludes, the magnificence of your body is not within my range. So we'll start to see that there are three interpretations to this verse, in one sense. There are many, but with the idea of my body of words, means on one side Brahma is saying, I cannot reach you with my mind, body and words, or your mind, body and words, I cannot reach them. Through mine, whatever, however, you, from one side or from the other. To make this point complete from both sides. So Krishna's body, Sanatana Goswami says, is both delimited and non-delimited, as we mentioned. It's there in front of Brahma, localized, but everything is inside that body. So the two things at the same time. Then Sanatana Prabhu continues, another meaning. He writes a whole brilliant meaning, another meaning. Another meaning. The magnificence of your mind, again, going to Krishna's mind, till now he spoke about Krishna's body. Your body is totally beyond my range. Now let's go to your mind. The magnificence of your mind, too, is not within my range. Nor is the magnificence of your speech. Especially the meaning of your words, measured and abundant, uttered to your intimate friends. As Guru Maharaj mentioned, he said, Bhavanabhad. So again, Vimohan goes on for Brahma. He's still bewildered on another level, upgraded form. So the reach of your mind, I cannot even grasp what you are thinking about, as we will see, especially because Krishna is silenced now. So what are you thinking about? I don't have a clue. And your words that you spoke with your friends, so many layers of meanings. And this is not the speech of Krishna with the gopis, which is even more layered of meaning with indirect speech, parokshabad, double, triple, fourth, quadruple meanings in romantic secret love. And Sanatana Goswami concludes, or summarizing the greatness of Braj, remember the previous verses were in praise of the Braj, Brahma mocks the fools who think they know about it, about Braj. So all this can be connected with Braj also specifically. Those who think they know Vrindavan, they know what's Brajabhakti. Brahma implies, Prabhu can mean also, according to Sanatana Goswami, O Lord of Gokul. Prabhu generally is translated as Lord. So you ultimately, you are Lord of Gokul, Prabhu. The glory of the people of Braj is beyond my and even your body, mind, and words. This is another implication of the word here. Body, mind, and words. I'm Prabhu. So, not only I am Vimohan, Brahma is saying, you are also Vimohan, Krishna. I cannot reach the glory of Braj with my functions, but this is also beyond yourself, Krishna is saying. You try to say something, you try to do something for them, but you remain, as we say before, eternally adapted to them. So this way, over beyond your own head. What's this? You know, love is above God. That's basically the main idea of the Bhagavatam. Therefore, those who think they know are fools, worthy of mockery. That's how Sanatana Goswami concludes his commentary, just in case we feel a little bit in that group. They're worthy of mockery. We don't want to be mocked by Sanatana Goswami, by Brahma, so try not to think you know. And you think you know, just get close to someone who knows he, she doesn't know, and then you will realize the extent of your own unknowing. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami will begin doing a brief, because we are reaching the end. So as Brahma is wrapping up his presentation, some of the commentators also will kind of refer back to the main verses and some to do some form of summary recap of the whole sutta. So that's how Jiva Goswami begins here. He's saying, the fact that Krishna's glory is difficult to grasp logically, like implying there are other ways of grasping Krishna's glory easier, in an easy way, but logically, good luck. So the fact that Krishna's glory is difficult to grasp logically was illustrated in a general way with verse 2. So he's referring back to the very beginning of the prayers. This is, verse 2 is a very similar verse to this one. So at the end, Brahma will make similar statements that the one he made at the beginning. Like again, beginning with something, elaborating in between, and closing with something similar. Then in verse 9, Brahma showed that the natures of Krishna's Swarup Shakti and Maya Shakti are inconceivable. Again, impossible to grasp logically. But through grace and revelation, they are understandable, conceivable. Then in verse 31, again, briefly, he's not going through every single verse. Brahma showed that the prema of the Brajavasis was logically inconceivable. I mean, he's making all these different points with verses, all of them in connection with inconceivable. No? So verse 2, Krishna's glory is inconceivable. Verse 9, Krishna's Shakti are inconceivable. Verse 31, the prema of the Brajavasis is logically inconceivable. It's a verse where he speaks about the fortune of the mothers and the cows who gave Krishna milk for a year. Then in verse 35, Brahma showed that Krishna's compassion is inconceivable. Again, logically, always add the word logically. It's conceivable through revelation. Why? That's the verse where Brahma is asking Krishna, how will you reward the Vrajavasis? You remain an eternal debtor. You are giving yourself, but this is inconceivable. And finally, in verse 37, previous class, Brahma showed that Krishna's pastimes are inconceivable. The reasons why he's coming on earth, here, and how that plays out. So Sri Jiva makes all these points, all these different verses in which Brahma is pointing at the inconceivability of all that is related to Krishna. Now, Jiva Goswami says, Brahma abandons further definitions, too much achintya, and begins his conclusion by indicating his desired goal. So Brahma said, there's so much achintya here that I will stop speaking here. This is way above all my functions. So Brahma implies here, Jiva Goswami concludes, O you who have, another meaning of Prabhu, you who have an amazing, infinite and huge power, Prabhu, your sublimity, though heard by the Vedas, cannot be accurately determined by my mind, by my body, that is, by my eyes, even though I'm looking at your form in front of me, and hence by my words. Therefore, let me request what I had requested from the beginning. So Brahma hears all his functions are collapsing in full humility. He now is going back, if you will, to first verse 1, the very first words of first verse of Brahma Stuti, say no mit dyate, which means I offer namaha to you, te, who is idya. Idya means the most worshipable one. So that's how the whole Brahma Stuti began. No mit dyate, I offer pranam to you, the most worshipable one. So Brahma is saying, let me conclude in this way. Let me not try to say anything else. I've tried, but I'm collapsing further and further. So let me wrap up. I began simply by praying to you, verse 1, and that is what I will do now, to conclude. So he's saying almost goodbye, no? Like making his point. Krishna is saying nothing. Before going to Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's concluding commentary, there is something interesting mentioned by Srinivas Suri, who is another commentator. So let me go there for a minute. So Brahma says, according to Srinivas Suri, Brahma is concluding here, "Therefore, I am certain of one thing. O Master, what is the use of saying much? Certain scholars who learn some bits and pieces about Nirvishesh Brahman are sure they know there is something beyond you." Yeah, here comes a smashing of Advaita Vedanta. "They are not connected with me in any way. That is, I want nothing to do with them." So according to Srinivas Suri, Brahma here is making clear, I'm not part of that particular group. I have nothing to do with those guys who think that you are temporary and Brahman is the all in all. I'm not connected. No sambandha with those people. And he already stated this, Srinivas Suri said in verse 27, "Hogya janata kyata." Verse 27, Brahma is saying, "How astounding is the ignorance of ignorant people." And again, in that verse, he humbly included himself first in the list. But he expresses that like as if condemning others, but he's there first. Why? But mostly that also is a reference, again, another smashing of Advaita Vedanta, because such a Brahman that they consider to be the only real thing, supposedly superior to you, Para Brahman, Purna Brahman, that Brahman, Nirvishesh, will act like a flower in the sky, which means like an illusion. You never see a flower in the... Flowers do not fly. That's the idea. No? It's just a proper, improper conception of reality. So on the strength of quotes like the one you mentioned in the Gita, no? When Krishna is saying, "Nothing is superior to me." Chapter 7, verse 7. Krishna is saying, "Nothing is superior to me." To me means, to me, my form of Bhagavan. Brahman is not superior to me. And so many other quotes. So on the strength of those quotes, to speak about Brahman as the ultimate reality is like a flower in the sky. Akasha pushpayate, like Prabhupada said to say, like a flower in the sky. It's not real. Some final smashing to Advaita Vedanta by some of our commentators. But again, ultimately, it invites us to, okay, explore the Advaita Vedanta in my own Vedanta system, which is supposedly to be a different one. So be careful of some leaking of those things there. Okay, let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He will say some interesting things and he will summarize the whole verse, but also he will present a very interesting dialogue between Krishna and Brahma. Again, Krishna is not speaking, although in many verses this is supposed, is more what may go like in Brahma's mind of some, a way of giving dynamics, but Krishna is not saying a word from the whole stuti. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, there's some hasya rasa in here as well. Here Krishna might say, after all these things that Brahma is saying, "What you say is true. How many persons like you are there in the world who wittingly proclaim in front of me all the truth about my identity, my brajavasis, my pastimes, and my devotees? You should try to meet such scholars and start a club." So you can imagine. But of course, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, fearing such a sarcastic response, it's not that actually Krishna said, but Brahma was fearing such a sarcastic response regarding what he said before, Brahma then speaks this verse with embarrassment, fear and repentance. Because he said some things about Brajavas and this, so Krishna said, "Oh, you know so much. You can join those guys who say they know and start the I Know Club or something." So fearing that, Brahma speaks this verse with repentance, fear and humility. Brahma says, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, "Let those who know, first line of this verse, but I am just the greatest fool." Like making it clear, I'm not one of those, I don't know. Krishna protests, "If that is so, if you don't know anything, then why did you keep talking all this time?" good point. If you don't know anything, why you are verse after verse after verse? Brahma replies in humility, speaking too much in your presence is simply a sign of my foolishness. Now he's realizing all that I say. I mean, he's considering all that I say was unworthy. Of course, it's incredible what Brahma said, but in his humility and experience, all the things that I've said till now just show how fool I am, speaking so much in front of you. So Krishna will say, then speak, but not deceitfully. If whatever you say till now was a show or whatever, speak the truth now. Be straightforward with me and don't make a show of humility. Because also one goes, oh, I'm so stupid the moment. Well, okay, what's your heart? Speak something. So in reply to that possibility, Brahma is saying this verse. Also Vishwanath Chakravarti will kind of paraphrase the verse saying, although Brahma is saying, although I have meditated on them, my mind has no power to understand your opulences. My eyes cannot grasp your transcendental form, and my words cannot describe you. Although I tried a few verses. As I said previously, verse 7, Brahma said, Gunatmanastipi gunan bimatum. Who can possibly count your unlimited transcendental qualities? In that same verse, Brahma, Krishna is called Gunatmana, which means his gunas are his very Atma. Again, he's not different from his qualities. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes saying, with another meaning, say, the magnificence of your mind is not my department. No, it's like way beyond my reach. What can I possibly know about what is in your mind? I told you earlier, second verse, which again is a similar one to this, I told you earlier that I cannot possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself. It's a mystery. I don't know what's inside of you. Similarly, I cannot understand anything about your body or any of your words, which include the Vedas. Although Brahma is well known by studying the Vedas and knowing the Vedas, but now he's kind of questioning, did I understand the Vedas actually? Because now I'm realizing a whole new level of reach and purport of them. So how much do I know the Vedas, which are your words? How much I understand your word? How much I understand you? Mm-hmm. Given that you remain silent while looking at me, I do not even catch a glimpse of speech from you. Therefore, who is able to know anything about you? In your presence, persons like me are totally insignificant. Brahma is crying at this point. No? He's not just speaking formally. No? He's full of repentance. He's full of humility. He's crying. And also he has some doubts. He's wondering why he's not speaking to me. Not a single word. What's happening here? Not to play the victim consciousness with Brahma. I'll be careful. But again, one meaning of your words are beyond myself is basically the point also is there are no words coming from you. So I don't know I know your words because there are no words, and therefore, since there are no words, I don't know what's in your mind. Mm-hmm. And what to speak of your body a few minutes ago, unlimited Narayans were coming from that. I cannot just say and grasp anything about that. So that's the end of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. So let's conclude by sharing some thoughts about why Krishna is not replying. Because still the prayers are not over, so some of you may have hope. Okay, maybe last verse, after the last verse, Krishna will say something, but not. Krishna won't say anything to Brahma in the whole chapter, basically, for some long time. So why? Why did he not reply? Not because after such a presentation of Brahma, humility, repentance, prayers, so incredible praise he mentioned and so on, you may expect he will say something, but nothing. Of course, there are many ways we can explain this. Of course, one of the ways is, and this is one point that Brahma, and I will make that point first because you have to keep that in mind to give context, is that Brahma here is making this point in this verse and in other verses. It's impossible to understand you if you don't want. Mm-hmm. So to make that point, we could say Krishna's not replying. It doesn't mean that he doesn't feel anything, doesn't have his own opinion, doesn't mean that he's not making the arrangement for whatever Brahma needs to happen, all that's taking place. But it's in a way that is difficult to fathom. Like, for example, when Krishna disappeared from the Rasa Lila. That's a long section to explain here, but briefly, as we know, Krishna disappeared from the Rasa Lila, and the gopis are singing, dying in separation of him. He returns eventually, and he sits in the midst of them, and they, in very indirect speech, because that's the language of Madhurya Rasa, they start to speak to him about there are different types of people. What do you think about these types of people? Like, indirectly, they want to know, where do you fall into these categories? No, the ungrateful one, the self-satisfied one, the one, these, and different long list of that. And eventually Krishna replies in such a way to show, I'm not in any of those categories. So, of course, the gopis with all this want to understand why you left us. And why you called us, and then you left us. How to understand that? Of course, the point is, it's not easy to understand him. And eventually he will explain, actually I disappeared to increase your love for me. Which was the last thing they were thinking. No? Mm-hmm. It seemed the opposite. No? You're ungrateful, you don't care for us, you enjoy by making our hearts calling us and then leaving us and so many. But actually he say no. Because if someone loves someone, it's like if someone obtains, he says, like a big treasure or jewel, a homeless person suddenly becomes rich by finding a Chintamani gem. Wow. But suddenly if that person loses that Chintamani gem, the only thing that person will think about is the Chintamani gem. You follow? So he said, that's why I disappeared. To increase your absorption in me. And that increases your love for me. And that's the best thing I can possibly give you to let your love increase. And the gurus were like, oh. In their humility, they thought, we thought bad about him, but actually now we realize his noble intentions and he loves us so much. And then, of course, Krishna very humbly acknowledges your love, Napari, that's the section, your love is such that I cannot repay back. But before saying that, he's explaining why he disappeared. He's explaining the nobility, if you will, how noble is his love also, no? As much as he can try to reciprocate, no? So, but the point is, I'm not easy to understand. Yeah, I will act in a certain way that, especially for sadhakas, Brahma is a sadhaka here, no? So for sadhakas, sometimes I may not reply immediately to your call. It's not that I'm not hearing your call, I'm not taking note of that, I'm not making the arrangements of that. But I may not reply immediately. Why? Well, one of the reasons is to increase the nature of your call. To make it to distill your call, basically, to condensate the quality of that. Because if you just call me and I'm there immediately and give you everything, probably you just get spoiled by me. So I may not reply immediately. It doesn't mean, again, I'm not there, I'm not here, I'm not taking all. So we should know all those things as sadhakas also. When we think, why he's not replying, he doesn't feel he's hearing me. It's not like that. But it's important to understand why, no? Which is his criteria behind. So we could say something in connection to that here as well. On one level, that's the consideration. On another level, some sadhus will say that Krishna has not reached yet his Poganda age. Here in this section of the Prakat Lila, Krishna is in Shesh Kumar, which is the very end of his, infanthood? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Childhood comes first and then boyhood, right, in English? Okay, childhood, okay, the end of the childhood. So still he hasn't reached Poganda. So, and it's in Poganda where his eloquent speech becomes manifest. Mm-hmm. Some Sal will say he has not reached yet that plane. So he receives all his eloquent speech and praise by Brahma, but he is still he's a child, a boy. So he doesn't have the words to receive. That's a more, if you want to put it like Lila perspective, why he's not replying. And also there comes a classical question that in this connection you can see, okay, Krishna's not replying to Brahma. We could say, okay, Brahma kidnap his friends. He didn't do something nice. So we could say, okay, we can understand from that perspective, Krishna's not replying. Okay, but if you go to the Govardhan Lila, Indra tried to kill all the Vrajavasis, which in one sense is way worse. I mean, he wanted to kill Krishna by killing the Vrajavasis. He had this insight, which is an insight. If I kill them, he dies. Of course, he cannot die, therefore they cannot die. But he tried. No? So he tried to kill the Vrajavasis, such a heinous act. But eventually, of course, after the whole Leela unfolded and Indra realized his mistake, came to earth, begged forgiveness, Krishna spoke to Indra. And not only spoke, but it was some nice exchange. Although Indra then made more mess eventually in the future even. So the point is, what Brahma did, he didn't want to kill the Vrajavasis. So he was not so heinous in his act. But Krishna did not reply to him. Indra was way more heinous and Krishna replied to him. So how to understand that? And one could say, one degree of reply is, yes, we are, and here we are considering the intention behind the act. But now let's go for 1 minute from the intention to the result. What happened as a result of that intention? What happened with my Indra's desire to killing all the Vrajavasis? What turned out from that? All the Vrajavasis got together for a week and having an uninterrupted darshan of Krishna under Govardhan. And Krishna had an interrupted darshan of all of them simultaneously. That was pretty cool. Poor Krishna. Huh? Was like, wow. Thank you, Indra. Oh, no, but he wanted to go. Look what happened. It was, thank you, Indra. Great. Interesting. Indra is Krishna's devotee at the end of the day. On some level, he's a Sakama Bhakta. So, yeah, he was called with Pichet Sudaracha. He did something heinous, but it resulted in this unique, uninterrupted, Haitukiya Pratihata meeting with the Vrajavasis for a week. So, both me and them had an uninterrupted darshan of each other for a week. But Brahma's offense, instead of reuniting us for a week, created separation for a year for my friends and cubs.
But not for the mothers of his friends.
Well, that's another consideration. But in some direction, that happened. And probably it would have been more than a year. Maybe at this point I never mentioned the whole series, so I will mention it now. Because we know that Brahma went, when he thought he kidnapped the boys and the calves and put them on a cave, he went to Brahma Lok. And we always say that this lasted for 1 year, earthly year, which is 1 day of Brahma. So you may question why Brahma only went for 1 day to Brahma Lok and return. Why so quickly? For us it's a lot, 1 year, but for him it's just like... No? So actually there's a story that is mentioned that actually he... Originally, maybe he was planning to stay more in Brahma Lok, and it will have been longer here, for sure. But it is said that when Brahma thought he kidnapped the boys and the calves, as we know, Krishna expanded himself as the boys, expanded himself as the calves. But there was one further expansion, and that was as Brahma. So Brahma expanded him. Krishna expanded himself as Brahma, while Brahma was on his way to Brahma Lok. But here, Krishna reached before Brahma Lok. And he told, appear as Brahma, not as Krishna. And he told that the gatekeepers of Brahma Lok, I'm here back, but there's an imposter that is dressed as me. And is coming in right at any minute. So don't allow him to come. Close the gates. Well, does the story sound familiar? Yeah. Yesterday we were... No, Abhimanyu. It seems that Krishna likes that type of lila a lot. Not dressing as Abhimanyu, dressing. So that's why Brahma had to return to earth, because he didn't have a place to enter in Brahma Lok. He went there one day, what it took to reach there, and the gatekeepers lived here, lived this place. You are an imposter. We don't want to start to abuse him with words. And Brahma was like, oh my God. So he returned to earth. So that point was 1 year here, but if Krishna wouldn't have done that, maybe who knows how long it would have been here. So Krishna didn't like that. For how long I will have been separated from my friends and cows. So, but even if we consider that, one could say, but in that case, generally we hear Bhava Grahi Janartana, that Krishna is, he takes the essence, he's Bhava Grahi. He takes the essence of one's mood, the intention. But regarding Brahman Indra, what I've said here, it seems that we are judging more according to the result than to the intention, because Brahma's intention was not to kill Brajavasis, but Indra's intention was. But it seems that Krishna's, like, how to say, like, rewarding not so much the intention in this case, but more like the final outcome of the intention, which was in the case of Indra, if you will, backwards, and everyone was united, and with Brahma is the opposite. But of course, this is the general rule: Baba Grahi Janardana. Krishna takes the essence of the devotee. But we could say that also the outcome has some influence. Mm-hmm. And again, try to bear in mind the main point that make the main point in this connection and that Brahma is making here is who can understand Krishna's mind. And Brahma needs to learn that lesson, because the whole problem in the beginning was he thought that he understood too well, too much. So he really needs to get to the point of, I cannot fathom that at all. Which, as we will see, it doesn't mean that Krishna is not considering Brahma's prayers and will do all the arrangement for him to attain his final goal. We will see that in the last classes. So again, Krishna's silence seems to be indifferent, but actually, something is coming. Work in progress, if you will. So we have also sadhakas. Because Brahma is a sadhaka who aspires for siddhi, for perfection, we should identify with this. And even if some days we may feel God's in Krishna's mind, we should at least have this unconditional, or develop this. Again, gopritvi varanam tatarakshishyatiti bishwa. So trust, this unconditional confidence. He's doing his job. I'm doing mine. He's here in the holy name. Where I am? And all these types of questions. So anyhow, some words regarding Krishna's silence. We may continue speaking about that, but just to give proper rest to Samadhi and other sadhakas, hopefully. So, and to again, it goes beyond Brahma, but applying to our own lives, where many times we may hear, think that Krishna is silent, or we may not hear what he's telling us. That's another thing. Through silence. Silence speaks a lot. Krishna says in the Gita, as we say it on our day of silence, he's saying, Maunam Chaibasmi Guhyanam. Of all secrets, I'm silence. So in other words, through silence, I'm sharing some secrets also. The secret is being told in silence. So Krishna is silent doesn't mean he's not saying anything. So anyhow, I'll conclude here, and tomorrow we'll continue with verse 39, which will be the penultimate verse of the Brahma Stuti. And Brahma will continue then wrapping up his presentation by asking permission to leave from Krishna, further establishing also Krishna's majesty, Krishna's sweetness, intimacy. And even in this particular verse, he will, as we will see, he will offer to Krishna the universe he created. Remember, he's like the designer, of the architect of the universe. So with full humility, well, if this helps something, I offer this one universe to you. Before doing parikram, circumambulating Krishna, and taking his leave. But that we will see tomorrow. So I don't know if there are any questions, something you may like to ask, comment, share, add today. You sure?
We were discussing the other night the inconceivability of both Bhava and Tattva. And also, as you mentioned a few times, describe how that gap is bridged by revelation. How that inconceivability of Bhava and Tattva become conceivable. Revelation, but what exactly does that mean? At the same time, like, you know, at the beginning you emphasize, like, you can't fully ever know.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, like, conceivability more experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are degrees of that. No, of course, in the beginning, the conceivability has to do just to basically turning to revelation, like Shastra, and getting to know those things that you cannot know otherwise. Not to begin with, I mean, we wouldn't have ever thought by ourselves about Krishna and the Vraja Leela. No? So it's not that you can just reach that conclusion by thinking. And okay, yeah, I infer that the ultimate, I have this intimation, the ultimate aspect of the, it doesn't happen. So you need to turn to getting to know about that, no? Which in one sense is revelation. In one sense you may not feel like revelation in like a mystical experience, of, but you are hearing things that you could never hear by your own effort. You are reaching, you are grasping in theory even conclusions that are reaching you. You cannot reach them by your own. So that's the first way of speaking about revelation, turning to Shastra, turning to Sadhu, that from them they'll... And then, of course, from that, from them you also receive the tools, if you want to put it like that, or sadhana, as Guru Maharaj would like to say, the method to the madness, Mahaprabhu, and our madness, eventually, in prospect. So... as much as you apply yourself to sadhana, guided by that original revelation, if you want to put it like that, further revelation will come in terms of course, yeah, direct experience and inner insights with certain things will start to make sense and become more and more real and alive. I mean, again, you cannot put it in words, but so I hope that happened to all of you in some way or another. That you, I don't know, you heard many things in the beginning about whatever, Krishna or the Leela or things that are beyond our scope. And it was a type of revelation at that point. Like, oh, I never heard this. This was a revelation. But then after some years of practicing, you have some like aha moments of revelation that you realize, oh, this was the actual meaning of what I heard 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that we call revelation. Of course, 20 years after that, you will have another aha moment. They say, oh, what I thought it was the original meaning 20 years ago, what I thought 10 years ago about the original meaning 20 years ago, after 30 years, I'm realizing this. No? And of course, keep multiplying that sequence ad infinitum forever, because there's never end. So in that sense, we say we never reach the point of, okay, now I fully understand. No, it won't happen. So... again, as we mentioned, even in one point of the classes, this is not happening even for Krishna himself. There are verses in the Bhagavatam which say that Krishna himself doesn't find an end to his own glories. Try to understand this point. I mean, the Absolute himself is, because constantly updating himself, his own beauty, his own qualities, all of them are in constant expansion and evolution. That's the unchanging nature of God. He's always changing. That's his unchangingness. Is always in that constant evolution in the context of Swarup Shakti, of course. So he cannot fathom that. That's Gaur Leela is all about that, basically. Of Krishna trying to explore the implications of being himself through the lens of his inner potency, and there's a Nityan avadvit for that to happen ongoing. It has no end. So my point is, if that happens to the Absolute, I mean, what to speak of us? So yeah, what we can conceive, we should never feel this is the whole picture and there's nothing else to conceive. It doesn't happen like that. And that's why those most advanced devotees who are having those type of constant revelations, if you will, are the humblest ones. Because that's the only way you can deal with that. I mean, they are receiving all that, but at the same time, they never feel... I'm getting it. I'm totally about to catch the whole thing. But they realize, Srila Samras will nicely say, are you ready to get closer to the infinite? You are embarking yourself on this project, but there is a price to pay, he will say. And the price is, the closer you get to the infinite, you will realize there's no limit to progress. There's no limit to making progress here. So that means, I'm always nowhere. Technically speaking. I mean, you're already on the infinite. I mean, I'm not meant to, how to say, to downplay the infinite. But the subjective experience, you're in the lila and so on. But you will never feel, because there's unlimited scope for progress. So you cannot assert, I advanced. But there's unlimited infinite. So how can you measure? Do you follow my point? So that's the only way you can enter there. And that's how makes sense what Sanatana Goswami says. Prem and humility are synonymous. Because if you enter into the land of Prem, you have to be extremely humble because there's no limit for progress there. So if you are not extremely humble, you won't be able to deal with those dynamics. Because there's always more, always more, always more. So in that sense, you will feel I'm nobody. That's the realization of the subjective experience of the Vrajavasis. They are the highest possible devotees, and they feel we are not devotees. They don't feel like we are devotees. They don't feel we are super advanced. They don't feel we are special, extraordinary. They feel Krishna is special, extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Who knows how we ended up being around him? Mm-hmm. Something previous life, I don't know. Let's not think too much about that. Let's just concentrate on the facts. So that's the point. I mean, they are the highest, they occupy the highest position in infinity, but they feel themselves nowhere, in one sense. They appear as uncivilized tribal village people. That's their presentation, like making this point. You want to enter the infinite, no limit for progress. You will never can ascertain yourself, I know something, and that's the taking form, that Jnana Sunya Bhakti taking form. Brajavasis, they cannot even read one word on each other's neck back. So, sorry if I'm sidetracked, but I think it's in connection to what we were speaking. So yeah, there's not point that, okay, now revelation came and I saw everything and I understood everything. That's what Brahma is saying in this verse. Let them say that. It's not possible. I mean, Brahma had pretty an epiphany a few minutes ago, and the result of his epiphany is, I know anything. Although he saw pretty much lots of things, and he said pretty much lots of things with his prayers. But there's so much more. That's the classical example of Ananta Shesh. You know, whenever I'm going through Chaitanya Charitamrita, and so many times over and over again, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami invokes Ananta Shesh almost at the end of every chapter. Because he says something about Mahaprabhu in every chapter. He tries. But at the end, he always concludes, but the past tense of Mahaprabhu are unlimited and boundless. So even if Ananta Shesh tries to praise them with his unlimited mouth, till these days, still trying and not finding success. And every chapter almost finishes like that. He wants to make that point. Do not ever think, I did it. There's a particular avatar of Bhagavan himself, which has as its only job to praise and to sing glories and to unlimited mouth, what Rupa Goswami prayed for. Now, give me unlimited tongues, unlimited ears. There you have the form of that, Ananta Shesh. And Ananta Shesh doesn't find an end to that. That's her name, Ananta. Ananta means no end to that. Yes?
So it's kind of like, just speaking back to what you're sharing, so nicely, like, the idea. And the word conceivable, I mean, I may have like an improper definition, but in my mind it seems like static, conceivable. So I was wondering if it would like, maybe putting it like through revelation, the inconceivable becomes like exceedingly more conceivable.
Mm-hmm.
Or like something, because a lot of times we hear like through revelation it becomes conceivable. Which sounds like a little like...
Yeah, the implication is more true revelation, that which is inconceivable otherwise becomes conceivable. But of course, the becomes conceivable doesn't mean you grasp it all.
Mm-hmm.
But means what you were not able to grasp at all by insisting with your head and logic and that, you gain access to that reality through this particular password means. But again, of course, as you mentioned, that doesn't mean that, okay, now I know everything, because you fall into Brahma's mistake, if you will. So yeah, if we need to upgrade the glossary of how to express the words, you are the ones who know English much better than me. But yeah, I agree with your point. No? Like something by something becoming conceivable. Actually, we mean it becomes less inconceivable, or something like that, or a little more conceivable. But it's never in a final, absolute, as you say, static and definitive. Why? Because if that's the case, that's contradicting the very nature of the subject we are trying to study, quote-unquote, to conceive, quote-unquote. Because again, over and over again, you go to what's the infinite? What's the very definition and implications of the infinite? Well, there's no end to that for himself even. So yeah, even if we express the words in one way or another, I appreciate your point that we should be careful not to, because we use the words and we express in those terms, but what does it mean for us? How do those words play out in the way we conduct ourselves to the infinite, in our attempt to conceive reality through revelation? No? How we are approaching the whole thing. No? So it's a delicate thing that we should be careful of. So there is no end to the wonder, to the experience of sacred wonder, basically. If not, we have to cancel the Nitya Lila the very first day, because second day they are doing the same thing again. The same thing again. Third day, fourth day, and they are doing that every day forever. So it must be something going on that is always new. And that's the very idea of Anurag, which is one stage of Prem, which makes the experience ever new, to see Krishna as for the first time. Not even to see Krishna as slightly different than yesterday, but as if for the first time, which means full updating of the experience. No? So, an anurag is one stage of prem, which is not the highest. Sneha, mam, pranayarag, anurag, pretty high. Bhav, mahabhav. Inside mahabhav, so many are developments. So, an in-between development of prem is you perceive Krishna and everything in connection to that as ever new for the first day, first time, at every moment. So that speaks about how much prem is continuously updating itself. It's a very, very intense, dynamic, ongoing process. Every millisecond, every blinking of the eyes of the Vrajavasis is a new Krishna. Under this, the beauty of Krishna increases at every blink. Their service disposition is increasing at every blink. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will say, and the two enter into a competition, and none of them accept defeat. Now, Krishna's beauty increasing, the service disposition increasing, but the more service disposition is there, the more beauty is there to correspond with that service disposition. And the more beauty is there, the Bharavasi want to serve that beauty, so their service disposition gets just like a marathon, a running competition, but nobody accepts the fit. So it's an ongoing affair, and that's like spiral evolving itself forever. That's the unfolding of the lilas.
And nobody gets tired
at all. Although it's pretty intense, as you can see, and dynamic. You can get tired if everything is the same, or if everything is always changing, you can also get tired. But it doesn't happen in this case. Nobody's ever thinking about doing something else, going somewhere else. As we know, when Krishna shows the Vrajavasis what will be your next lifetime, it's not that Vrajavasis are hoping, oh, give me a break for one lifetime, send me to Swarga to enjoy a little, to Vaikuntha and Santaras, to meditate on one cloud over there, but not to be involved in this exhausting dynamic. Nobody thinking like that. And Krishna shows to them next life is he's like putting a mirror in front of them, and in the portal they see just the same situation they are in. They're like, ooh, they don't say Gaur Hari Bol in that day. Jai, celebrate, no? So these are very incredible ideas. That's revelation. There are ideals that have the power to capture our attention and consume all our Of course, it's not just about an intellectual thing of ideas, but it can begin at that point and capturing our heart to such a point. So that's pretty much a revelation, but of course there's so much yet to be revealed. So let's continue the journey. Yes?
I'm thinking about the proper means.
Yes.
And can I asking you if we are committing any offense using a prabhula's a colloquial word? Because I'm thinking in that when so many people say prabhu, prabhu, and it's ignorance because we don't know the how much meaning has this word.
Oh, of course, if one doesn't know the meaning, and one is using one word casually because we see everyone is using the word, and we, okay, I'm supposed to call the male Vaishnavas Prabhu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Prabhu, Prabhu. And someone asks you, what's Prabhu? I don't know, but everyone is saying Prabhu, so I'm saying. There's not offense considered in that case. It's just because one is not aware of what's going on. It's just like some initial copy-paste, if you will. A little bit more like imitation. Which there's place for that in certain chapter. But it's the idea in time is expected that we start to ask ourselves, what's the meaning of everything I'm doing?
Yes.
not to go neurotic, but just I like to know what's the meaning. I'm using this word 108 times per day. I would like to know what's the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So when you know the meaning, you're like, oh. So you start to probably use it more carefully. Mm-hmm. Probably you won't call everyone Prabhu. Of course, there's place for different ways. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will call every one of his disciples Prabhu. Like showing the guru making a point on having great humility. It's not that, oh no, my disciples are not my Prabhu. Prabhu means master.
Mm-hmm.
So generally one is, haha, Prabhu, Karadoya, Diho, More, Padacha. Prabhu is a name for Krishna, Prabhu is a name for guru. You address your master. No? So he's my master, I'm your servant. You present yourself in that way. But Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta as the guru will address his disciples as Prabhu, my masters. As we explained the other day, because the guru will feel, my disciples are not my disciples, all of you are my gurus. He gave a famous lecture on his Vyasa Puja, the last Vyasa Puja, about addressing all his disciples as my masters, and my dearest friends and my gurus, and explaining why. So again, there is a place for that to happen also, but also there is a place for, I mean, we cannot also imitate Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and in some cases, some devotees, in their state, they may not feel inspired enough to call every single person Prabhu. And that's not necessarily an offense, also. Mm-hmm. Not like, you should call him Prabhu, you are not humble enough, but you should behave as Prabhu as well, which all it implies. Of course, if you don't want like to put the bar too high, and unless you do all these are all the meanings of Prabhu, unless you do this, I won't call you Prabhu, only Krishna is my Prabhu. I'm not saying that, but also not to take the term in a cheap way, no, and just use it formally when you already know what it means. No? So, yeah.
I don't know what year it was, I mean, it could have been 1970 or 71, and Prabhupada said that we should all call each other Prabhu, or disciples should address men and women, just to have a respect.
Yeah, he wanted to make that point, yeah. I mean, technically speaking, that's wrong in Sanskrit, because Prabhu is just a male term, but it doesn't happen to be a female parallel to that, interestingly. And in that sense, I understand the point, no? Because, of course, there shouldn't be a difference in between, like, you are male, you're higher than a woman. I mean, it's basic, but just in case I make the point, because some people seem not to understand that yet. But yeah, some people may prefer not to use that, because it, technically speaking, it's not correct. It's okay, as long as they treat all of them equally. So I'm saying all this because I know that some devotees may militate in favor, okay, everyone has to use Prabhu, because if not, you are discriminating. Not necessarily. I mean, I can call all of you Prabhu and treat you as who knows what. It's not just the word. It's how I treat you. So Prabhupada make the point, and I, of course, he knew that Prabhu is technically speaking only for male, but he wanted to make, of course, a higher point beyond the technicality of Sanskrit, that I want all of you to treat each other with that respect, with that humility, and of course behave in such a way to deserve that, not because you want to deserve, but I mean, it's not just about treat each other like that and you do nonsense and you expect, hey, you didn't call me Prabhu today. So yeah, but also again, it's a complex topic in the sense that also one can become too much overemphasizing those things in the sense of woman, man, and in the name of protecting one thing, you get more absorbed into these two upadis, no? Like woman and woman and the man. But at the end of the day, we are not either of those. So it's a fine line. Of course, I understand that everyone is equal and we should strive for establishing that platform. and in the attempt of that, we may have to say some things. But it's a fine line that you may, in the name of doing that, you become identified when one or the other, or you, what to speak, developing some feminist tendencies or the opposite of that, and that starts to, like, how to say, not create some unbecoming mixture there, because we try to go beyond that, not like sometimes it was maybe in Kirtan, I say that once, not like. So in the spirit of trying to allow ladies to sing, put it like that, they say, okay, now we'll sing Maha Mantra. Now the Prabhus, Hare Krishna. Now the ladies or the Matajis. But in one sense, by doing that, you are in the name, Kirtan is a practice that is supposed to take you beyond duality. But you are reestablishing duality in the context of Kirtan. You follow? By Kirtan, you are supposed to enter non-dual consciousness, when you are not thinking in terms of man and woman. Mm-hmm. So in the context of Kirtan, I'm reminding you, you are a woman, you are a man. You now the man sing, now the woman. that's not correct. No? Although the intention, again, but sometimes intention needs to be also, the way to hell is paved with good intentions, they say. I mean, I'm not sending them to hell, but just making the point. So anyhow, I know that's also a contemporary topic in the Gaudiya community here and there, so that's why I'm mentioning some extra words. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Chiman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Primanand Hari Bol.